What is going on, everybody? The way I'm going to attack this Monday night football game, John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast, back again. Appreciate everyone listening. You know, this game changed dramatically in the last 10 minutes with officiating calls. And I got some takes. And I have defended the officials this year, especially with bang-bang calls. You know, I think we can be, including myself, a little hard. But tonight was disgusting. It truly was. As an unbiased guy, no money on the game, no nothing. Was just enjoying a high level, watching Matt Stafford, Rodgers throw dimes, big tackles, big hits. Pretty well-coached game. The officials, Roger Goodell, the league, should be ashamed of themselves. The back judge that made those multiple calls on Trey Flowers should be fired. Like, this is we're talking about a $15 billion industry. We're talking about games that gets 15 to 20 million people to watch. I'm offended for the Lions. I'm at a loss for words. I really am, and I talk for a living. I got a lot of thoughts today. We're going to dive into Kyle versus McVay, the big West Coast Niners-Rams matchup, the Cowboys and the Birds. We got a big game coming up between 2-3-3 teams. Seattle just kind of flex their culture muscles on the Cleveland Browns, who I've got to dive in. I went hard on Freddie Kitchens last week. I'm an equal opportunist. I got some takes on Baker, who was just beyond terrible. He was awful. You're the number one pick. Like, bro, play better. If you're going to talk so much, you got to play better. He was terrible against Seattle. And then I'll just kind of go around the leagues. Things that jumped out to me from Sunday and maybe even a little Saturday. College football is getting kind of interesting. How about my guy Joe Burrow? He's balling. LSU Tigers look good. And, of course, Middlecoff Mailbag and every podcast. At John Middlecoff is my Instagram. And you slide up into those DMs, then I answer your questions here on the show. Same as my Twitter handle. Follow away. Shoot me DMs away. Easiest way to get a hold of me. But let's start with the Monday Night Football game. I've gone into the Monday Night broadcast. I now mute. Tonight I muted and I listened to YouTube and Chris Stapleton and just music and some podcasts. And I turned it on a little bit toward the end, but it's a rough listen. But that's not defining the game. I actually thought Booger did a good job at the end when it came to the penalties. Being a ref's a hard job. You know, it's a difficult job. I get it. You are determining games where if you put on the money hierarchy, you know, you got head coaches making between $5 and $10 million. You got players making between $500,000 and $30 million. And you know, how much is referees making? $300,000-$400,000? It wasn't their full-time job till a couple years ago. I am not disputing how hard the job is. You have guys weigh 250 pounds, 280 pounds, that run 4 or 5 speeds, that are colliding into each other like two Hummers going 25 miles an hour. It's tough. I say the same thing for NBA referees. It's hard. So I give you the benefit of the doubt on bang-bang plays. Why I don't mind replay. Because with some of these calls, they're hard to make. And I've also supported pass interference penalty. Because the league specifically told everyone, we're going to allow PI to be reviewed, but we're not doing bang-bang plays. They told every single person that. They said, we're going for the Rams-Saints situation. Egregious errors. Like when a dude gets blown up a second before the ball gets there. Not hand-fighting. Because at the end of the day, it is football. And I'm pro-defense. I'm pro the defensive player being able to kind of mess with the wide receiver a little bit. It shouldn't just be open season for the guy to run unimpeded everywhere he wants. The defenseless receiver, bullshit. He's not defenseless. He knows there are defenders standing right there. This is the NFL. This isn't peewee football. So I defend the referees. But tonight might have been one of the most egregious errors we've ever seen happen twice. And it cost the Lions the game. Trey Flowers, I thought the best thing that Booger's ever said, or maybe it was Testor, I did turn it up toward the end, turn off the podcast, so I can't claim that I didn't listen to any of it. Trey Flowers, who learned how to play the position in the National Football League by the greatest coach to ever grace the sidelines, college, pro, or high school, Bill Belichick, had never in his career been called for hands to the face. Why? Because he'd been taught by the best. He knows better. And he's just a good player. For them to call that penalty the first time, when it would have knocked the Packers with 9 minutes left, forced them to punt, the Lions were up 22-13. I don't want to say the game was 100% over there, but the Packers would have been in trouble. So to call that play when the replay showed he didn't even get near the face mask is a joke. When you are standing right there, you have to get it right on a play that's relatively slow. It's not a bang-bang tackle. This isn't a fumble. You're watching the guy work his hands on the shoulder pad. You're standing right there. You can't get it wrong. But then for it to happen a second time, when it essentially, I mean, it did lead for the game to be iced, is a joke. And I'm not one to call for anyone's job or whatever. I mean, granted, I will. But I don't know who the individual was, the back judge. He should be relieved of his duties today. He should be done, fired. Because he's simply incompetent. He's simply incompetent. If that had been a player that had been consistently, you know, flagged for that penalty, it was something that he does a lot, I would somewhat understand. But this is a player who has never had it happen to him in his life. Ever. Not once. I can't believe what I just witnessed, what a joke that is. I feel devastated in a weird way. I don't care about either of these teams. I feel devastated for the Lions. They got absolutely screwed on Monday Night Football. It's one thing, and it shouldn't be any different, but it is. If this had been a Sunday morning game in Green Bay, you know, and the Green Bay fans and the Lions fans are watching, but everyone's watching their team. It's another thing for that to happen on national television. Roger, his minions in Park Avenue should be, you know, embarrassed. Is like, we've had a lot of guys this year been on top of these officials because there's so much money on the line, so much gambling on the line, so much jobs on the line. And I get Roger doesn't care as long as the ratings go up and people talk about it. But as someone that once upon a time in my life, I was a diehard Sacramento Kings fan. And they lost a Western Conference Finals to the Lakers. And they had a play in Game 5 where the ball, Vlade tipped the ball out, Robert Horry hit the shot, you tip your hat. But then there were some moments in Game 6, and definitely Game 7, where the amount of fouls were called by a guy that was proven on the take from the mob. So I hate it when people are like, you can't throw around that stuff. You can't just throw it. Something's rigged. Well, we have a history in professional sports, in recent memory, of these referees being involved with the mob. Now, I don't know if the mob exists. I love mob movies. But when stuff like that happens, you have to think, this guy's either blind, so he should get his eyes tested, or does he have money on the game? And if you think about it, with how easy gambling is, I'm in bed with a gambling company. If you follow me on Twitter or Periscope, my other podcast, they've been long partners. Pay good money. We have a lucrative partnership. There are a lot of people involved in gambling now, more than ever. So is this guy in the bed with a gambling mob? I don't know. But I'm at a loss after watching that. I really am. I was planning on opening this podcast, talking about how much I root for Matt Stafford. If he would have ever been drafted by a guy like Andy Reid or Sean Payton, how great his career could have turned out. Think of what a joke the Lions are with Martha Ford and their two best players, both retired at 30. Basically just said, you guys keep the money. I'm out of here. You guys are, I can't take this anymore. And I was going to talk about the Packers, just how much moxie they have. I mean, Rodgers was throwing BBs and dimes all game. His guys, balls were bouncing off face masks and bellies and hands. Rodgers was fantastic. I was going to talk about the football game. But instead, I'm talking about the referees and the blown officiating. And the joke of those last two penalties, which I have not watched, you know, every game of the NFL season. I've watched a good amount of them. I would say I've watched 80% of the NFL games this season. Now, a large majority are on, I watch on condensed version. So I'm not, it's different when you just watch the game over a 3-hour period, right? You take in more and you see more stuff. So I can't pretend to have seen every call or whatever. But I would put those couple calls that we witnessed tonight, the hands of the face. It was actually the same call, just happened twice, to the same player. Who comes from the Patriots, who plays for Patricia, who's a high-level guy, who, again, has never been called for that penalty in his career. And then when you watch the replay, and I get slow-mo's different than live, it was clear he wasn't even close to the guy's face mask. He was on the shoulder pad. And it cost the Lions the game. It's just not acceptable. And I think it brings into question when people throw out these conspiracy theories. And I'll be honest, I got a little conspiracy theory just not necessarily on this, but just in general. I lean that way sometimes. I don't blame anyone for thinking it. Go, is this guy on the take? Does this guy have money on the game? Because you can say that without it. Like, yeah, I don't think you're joking. I think you might be dead serious. And you might be onto something. That was Monday Night Football. The Lions, who clearly aren't bad. Like, they win this game. We start talking Lions playoffs. That's a crippling loss. Now, instead of being 3-1-1, they're 2-2-1. Like, that's... And they lose to the Packers in Lambeau. Instead of having a win in... Like, that's a big deal, man. That's gutting. That's embarrassing. This has to be fixed. And, you know, my solution, because it's easy to criticize, my solution is you start fining referees. Now, obviously, if a player's making $5 million and you fine him $20,000, it's different. But if a referee's making $50,000 a game, whatever the number is, you fine him a small percentage. And it basically just says, this is not acceptable. We will hold you to account, or fire guys, or, you know, whether it's like, you know, in EPL soccer where they boot you out of the league, relegate you, like everyone wants, like to happen to the Redskins. That's what you do to referees. You go down to college or high school. You're not welcome in the big leagues anymore because we hold ourselves to a higher standard. That's what Nick Saban does. That's what Bill Belichick does. That's what the league does when it comes to their money. Why can't we do that with the referees? At least people will feel better. If I'm a Lions fan today, if I was a 15-year-old Lions fan, if I was 15, I probably wouldn't be in tears. I would be dropping F-bombs and throwing things at the wall. If I was like an 8-year-old Lions fan, I'd be in tears. Be like, that's a joke. That's insane. It's one thing to lose. Aaron Rodgers beats you, you tip your hat, right? It's one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. He beats us, I'll tip my hat to him. We lost in Lambeau. Shit happens. But to lose like that, and maybe they would have lost anyway. But at least give me a chance. I think the league office, I think they got to fire the guy. I really do. And maybe that sounds extreme. Maybe it's heat of the moment. But that's not okay. Okay, let's dive into the big game out west, the Niners and the Rams. And I think we've had somewhat of a changing of the guard. And I want to dive into Kyle and McVay. When McVay was hired, now there are many people that listen to this podcast. Hell, we did a million listens last month. Thank you. Appreciate everyone listening. But you have no clue my takes 2 years ago. You've been started listening over the last, you know, calendar year. A lot of you are relatively new, maybe the last 6 months. When McVay happened, if you listen to my other podcast or follow me on Twitter or whatever, I thought it was crazy. I'm a millennial. I'm like a year older than him. But I had seen the way NFL players operate, and I just like, God, it's going to be a lot to ask a 31-year-old guy to do it. Turns out McVay is a really high-level guy, and he's very, very impressive. And he's earned the praise of the last couple years. But when you look at the job he inherited, and I'm not trying to diminish what he's done, because he's won the division twice, he made it last year to the Super Bowl, and he's earned the credit. Whether he's probably not going to make the playoffs this year, but I'm not going to look at him that much differently. But he did inherit a pretty talented team, right? Jared Goff had just been the number one pick. They had Aaron Donald. They had good players on the roster. Todd Gurley was already there. You know, sometimes you inherit a team that's quote-unquote underachieving that has talent. It happened to Chip Kelly years ago when he showed up in Philly. Foles, Vic, Deshaun, LeSean, Jerry Macklin, Jason Peters, Jason Kelsey. There were a ton of players on the roster. It had happened to Harbaugh with the Niners. Vernon Davis, Navarro Bowman, Patrick Willis, Joe Staley, Frank Gore, Michael Crabtree, Alex Smith. There were a lot of good players on the roster. Now, Harbaugh had proven he could go to a terrible roster, i.e. Stanford, and resurrect it. So it's a little different. Chip, his entire career, the Oregon Ducks, when he took over that program, they were already pretty damn good. Every year in the top 25, he took them to the next level. When he got to Philly, he started winning again. But then eventually he got exposed. Because you have to have different pitches. You can't only throw fastballs. And I cover the Niners very, very closely. They are the cash cow in my business for my other podcasts. They're the biggest brand by far in California from a football standpoint. And watching Kyle the last couple years, it was clear he could really call plays. He was just a really, really dynamic play caller. Him and McVay are both unique because they are younger coaches, but they love running the ball. They would run it every time, all game, if it works. Now, the difference is Kyle consistently does things that you go, wow. He does like throwback passes, play action, boot,
end around. He does a lot of just window dressing, and sometimes he does these trick plays. Where Sean McVay is a little more vanilla. Now, it's worked these last couple years being, quote-unquote, somewhat vanilla because he's had really good players. Now, Todd Gurley's gone. Their offensive line's a shell of himself. And I just watched Robert Saleh, who is now like getting considered to be a head coach next year, the bald guy who was going nuts on the sideline, who the last couple years around where I live, people were talking, should he lose his job? Turns out coaches are usually better when they have better players. But took McVay and bent him over the table and made him say uncle. Beside the opening drive, which they ran at every single play right down the Niners' throats, and Robert Saleh, who spoke to the media after the game, which is unheard of in the NFL, Kyle, who, and I put Sean there too, are very secure for being young guys. Maybe it's because they've been famous now, especially Kyle for a while. They're super rich. He let Robert Saleh go to the podium. And Robert Saleh said that after the first drive when the Niners got absolutely gashed, every single play was a run. Boom, 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 touchdown. Kyle's like, don't worry, just make your adjustments, we're good. He adjusted, and they kicked the living crap out of the Rams. They bent him over, and it was a ultimate behind-the-woodshed game. And I was so shocked that Sean McVay didn't have any other pitches. Like, you watch Aroldis Chapman, he throws 100 miles an hour. So his fastball is elite. It doesn't get any better than that. He also has other pitches, though. He doesn't throw his fastball every single pitch. It's the only way you can operate it. And it's time for Sean McVay to kind of come with another pitch. And actually, and I say this all the time, having been, you know, I quote-unquote failed earlier in my career. I was fired from the NFL in my late 20s. I was like, what else do I do? I can only scout players. What else can I do? I just had to adapt. Kyle has kind of failed at other places. They failed in Washington. Then he got fired. Then he failed kind of in Cleveland. And that first year in Atlanta didn't go that well with Matty Ice. So he's had some ups and downs. And then his first 2 years in San Francisco, they didn't win many games. Last year when they were supposed to win a lot more games, Jimmy Garoppolo tears his ACL in the third game of the season. And I say it all the time. I've watched basically every press conference and every word that's come out of Kyle Shanahan's mouth publicly since he's been the head coach of the 49ers. He's been really even keel. And he's handled himself very, very well in some very shitty circumstances. Now, I'd put it on the flip side. I've watched Sean McVay very closely. Even in his losses, I always think he handles himself very well on the sideline. That's why I believe in Sean McVay. But I tweeted something during the game that I would imagine Kyle Shanahan, this game meant a lot to him. Because there is no way on God's green earth that Kyle Shanahan looks at Sean McVay and doesn't think he's better than him. Now, he can't publicly say that. He probably never would. They're buddies. And the records are on Sean McVay's side. But I've been watching Kyle Shanahan very closely. I've also watched Sean McVay, who's clearly probably a little more culture. You know, he's like a young millennial kind of Tomlin. You know, that's how I'd kind of, you know, I like him. I'm a big fan of Sean McVay. I'd love to have him on this podcast. But when it comes to the X's and O's and scheming things up, I think Kyle is on another level. And honestly, I'm not sure it's that close. Now, if I would have said this last year when the Niners were 1-10 and the Rams were 10-1, you'd be like, Middlecoff, you're an idiot. So that's why I always think we love making concrete statements on coaches and players. Like, I can make a concrete statement on an Andy Reid, on a Sean Payton, a Pete Carroll. They have 20, 30 years of coaching. When you talk about these younger coaches and haven't, hell, I know one Matt Nagy. He's coached 1 year and he made the playoffs. But I think we'll have a, once Matt Nagy's been a head coach in the league for 10 years, or Kyle Shanahan's been a head coach for 10 years, or Sean McVay's been a head coach for 10 years, we'll know who they are and kind of where they stand in the landscape. It's no different with players. Everyone's like, Middlecoff, look at Lamar Jackson 3 games in. You were way wrong. You know what it turns out? Lamar Jackson kicks the crap out of bad teams, and he gets throttled by the good teams. That's so far, that's the information we have, right? Now, if I don't overreact to every game, just like I don't overreact with coaches to every game. Though, I think the longer you build a resume, you can have concrete statements. And it's like, Kyle, I said coming into this season, I've been one of the rare guys, maybe not rare, but I'm like, Kyle's an elite coach, Kyle's an elite coach, Kyle's an elite coach. But to really establish where no one can argue, the great thing about the NFL is we just judge you on wins and losses, not how close you come or how hard your team plays. Like, the price of admission is playing hard. I love it when I read about a professional athlete. Like, when I see Kirk Herbstreit talking about Joe Burrow's work ethic and heart, I'm like, okay, that's impressive. You know, because a lot of college guys, you're still learning exactly what it takes, how to prepare. Like, I put stock into that. But when you tell me about, like, a five-year pro, he gets to the facility really early. He works hard in the weight room. Great. I mean, this is the NFL. Pay him $5 million for that. No shit. He better, or he'll be out of the league. I don't give extra credit points for coaches and players when they work hard. Everyone in America that's successful works hard. That's life. That's the National Football League. But so like Sean McVay, all these guys work hard. They all spend an incredible amount of time in the office, probably an unhealthy amount. But some that spend time in that office for, you know, all day, every day during the season, get more out of it. It's why I was critical of John Gruden the last, you know, year and a half. Like, why do you get into the office at 4 a.m. and you're not winning any? What's the point of it all? Now, eventually, if you have results, it's worth it. Here's what I know. When Kyle Shanahan shows up, his team is going to have wrinkles that you can't prepare for. And that's how I determine a good coach. And now his defensive coordinator has proven if you can give him really good players, he can also do the same. Because that defensive performance yesterday against the Rams, who have Cooper Kupp, who I was shocked the Niners could cover, same with Robert Woods and same with Gerald Everett, the offensive line, I mean, they're just not good enough right now for the Rams. They replaced starters from last year with guys they had drafted, and they're getting their ass kicked by good players. And Jared Goff, listen, I haven't watched the game back a second time. I thought, just off my first time viewing television copy, that I thought he was going to get some unfair criticism. Same with Baker Mayfield last year. I'm not trying to say they played well. They never had a chance. Because the moment, like, it'd be like, you know, you come up to take a breath from the water and someone shoves your head back underwater. That's essentially what the Niners' defensive line was doing to the Rams' front. Their best lineman, Whitworth, Nick Bosa was taken to Pound Town and shoving him back into Jared Goff. Their guards inside were getting their butts whooped by guys that are quote-unquote considered a bust like Solomon Thomas. And are the 49ers great on offense? No, they're not. Like, is Jimmy Garoppolo the superstar that I once thought he would be? Probably not. Is he a good player? Yeah. And I think he has a lot of room to improve. He's still, you know, I don't think he has 16 career starts in the NFL yet. He's got a long way to go. George Kittle, superstar. Kyle Shanahan, superstar play caller. Their wide receivers are still a little bit of a question mark. They're missing their two tackles. They're missing Joe Staley and Mike McGlinchey and a key part of their running game in Kyle Juszczyk. We're not even there. And they didn't skip a beat. Like, that's what coaching is. That's why Kyle Shanahan, you know, got $45 million as a first-time head coach 2 years ago. And he signed a six-year deal. And it's starting to come to fruition. And McVay, I don't think he's just going to go away. But he's going to have to look at himself in the mirror and just do some different shit. You know, you got to throw some different wrinkles. Unless you just want to be Chip Kelly. Now, I don't think Sean McVay is Chip Kelly. He's too smart. He's been around too many good coaches. Like, Chip just continues to get embarrassed because he hasn't changed in 10 years. I do think Sean will change. Maybe not this year, but he's going to have to go in the lab a little bit in the offseason and adapt. And he hasn't really had to because he's been winning. Where Kyle, because he's lost at several different stops, he's been fired. Listen, as someone that's been fired, I wish I made Kyle Shanahan money when I was fired. It forces you to look in the mirror and try different things. Get out of your comfort zone. Sean McVay, since he's been in L.A. up until yesterday, or those last couple weeks, hasn't really had to force himself out of his comfort zone. This is the first time they've ever lost three straight games under him. They didn't lose two straight games till the end of last year, and they were 11-1. So it didn't really impact that much. Now, it ultimately cost him home field advantage, but that's, you know, first-class problems. I think finally Sean McVay is going to have to look in the mirror and just go, Kyle Shanahan said a while back, he watches, one of the first things he does after he watches the Niner game back in the office on Monday morning, he watches the Patriots. He clearly just watches a lot of stuff. And I'm not, maybe Sean McVay does that, maybe he doesn't. But he's going to have to dig deep because what he's doing right now has been figured out. The batters at the plate have timed out his pitching. So you got to mix in an off-speed pitch, something people don't see coming. And then you can go back to your fastball. Because then they're off balance. Right now, when the Niners played the Rams, not only were they not off balance, they knew what everything was coming. And now they finally have, you know, close to equivalent of players, and it was a coaching mismatch. Okay, before I get into Eagles and Cowboys, I just want to hit on something. I know some people won't care, but just the NFL in LA. And last night, Sunday night, was a complete embarrassment. Where the Chargers play is like where, you know, third-tier bands play concerts. It holds 25,000 people. It was all Steeler fans. The Chargers right now are a complete embarrassment. Now, the Rams, who had a home game also Sunday afternoon, that Coliseum was like 70% Niner fans. Well, the reality is there are more Niner fans in the state of California than probably every other team in California combined, be the Rams, Raiders, and Chargers. It's pretty easy to figure out. For 25 years, they were one of the great dynasties we've ever seen. When you're that great, you just create, you know, several generations of fans. And then the other two, like the Raiders move every, you know, 5 years, and the Rams left. So it's pretty easy to figure out. But I also understood, because a lot of people are like, why does the NFL need to get in Los Angeles? I understood why the NFL needed to get in Los Angeles. This is a numbers game. And there are, I don't know the exact number, 15 million people in LA? Like, it's enormous. You want to have a footprint there. So I understood moving the Rams back. It made no sense either letting the Raiders go or having the Chargers go. But it 1,000,000% made no sense putting the Chargers there. Dean Spanos is the worst type of rich guy, in my opinion. He just hoards all of his money, and he just looks at it in a bank account. For those of you don't realize aren't from California, Dean Spanos is like a third-generation elite wealth. My dad was a farmer, used to do business down the Central Valley in Stockton through Fresno to Bakersfield, where the Spanos family did a lot of business. They had a lot of real estate, and they were just a high-level, highly thought-of family. And Dean Spanos, sometimes the younger generation is not as stiff and tight as their grandpa or dad, and clearly Dean is, because there's a reason the Chargers are consistently inconsistent, because Dean never hires a high-level coach. His coach is always on the lowest-paid scale in the NFL. So for 5 years and now 2.5 years, he's had Anthony Lynn, who probably makes $4 million. Mike McCoy was probably making $3 million. Like, you get what you pay for. Like, go pay a big-time coach. But he wouldn't. He would rather hoard that money in his savings account and leech on with Stan Kroenke, who's paying for the bad boy himself, because Stan has a bunch of money, acts like he has a bunch of money, and spends a bunch of money. And there were reports like last month that Dean Spanos wasn't picking up or holding his end of the bargain. Of course he's not. He's just piggybacking on their success. They're building it all. The Chargers have no business being in L.A. The league should mandate they go back to San Diego. Obviously, Dean would never do that. I don't know the legalities of it. It would be complicated. But right now, there are several owners just truly embarrassing the league. But there is probably no owner from a standpoint of, you're ruining this market with all these people. Clearly, and the Steelers are unique because they're one of the probably, just quantity-wise, have more fans in this country than maybe any team beside the Cowboys. So it's not, I've been to Steeler fans at Raider games. They're everywhere. Same with the Packers. So it's not that abnormal, but it's always that way for the Chargers. Whether they're playing the Chiefs, whether they're playing the Broncos, whether they're playing Seattle, whether they're playing the Eagles, it doesn't matter. It's never a home game. They do not belong in L.A. I went to Cal Poly, and Cal Poly is in the central part of California, Central Coast. And it was probably 50-50, people from Southern California and people from Northern California. And I'd say the biggest difference of us in Northern California and the Southern California people is there is a surf beach culture down south that we don't really have up north. Though, we do have the craziest surf spot in Mavericks, but that's for crazy dudes, not normal surfers. Surfing's not a huge part of our culture up here. Our beach weather is cold, and we have great white sharks literally everywhere. Down there, their beach, while the water's still relatively cold, it's more beachy. It's just a different, you know, different culture. Skateboards, beachy, it's just a little different that way. But I would say this about San Diego, and I went to school with a ton of them. They were diehard Charger fans, loyal as can be. Now, I understand San Diego, wow, it's just an elite city. I mean, it is just beautiful women, beautiful weather, beautiful real estate. If you said, Middlecoff, you got a brand new house, we'll pay for it, I'd move down to San Diego tomorrow. If I could just keep doing this and live in San Diego, you know, I had a sweet house on the water, whatever. It's awesome. Anyone that's ever been to San Diego can attest. Place is badass. But they were passionate about their football team. They cared about the Chargers. But Dean didn't care about them. But Dean also doesn't really know what he's doing. His resume speaks for itself.
And right now, that game Sunday night, one, it was a joke to even have Sunday Night Football in that little-ass stadium. Two, this is a debacle. I don't know what the league can do. Maybe it's too late, but they should try to force Dean back to San Diego. And I, you know, I'm never like, force the guy to sell the team. That's unrealistic. You know, the league, if they could have, would have kicked Mark Davis out 10 years ago. You know, they would love to do that. They would love to kick Mike Brown out. You can't. You know, that's just not the way. These owners still have some cash. They could fight it in court. You can't kick him out. So you can't kick Dean out. But right now, he's a problem for the league because no one wants him in Los Angeles. Literally. I don't think that he has one fan. And San Diego, while they're mad at him, they would take him back. Okay, let's talk about this big Sunday night game coming up and the two teams that are going to be involved. I actually just read on Twitter that the game at the Home Depot Center, Chargers Steelers, lowest rated game of the year. Not shocked. I turned it off to watch the Yankee game. It was terrible. It was unwatchable. It had Dean Spanos written all over it. But this game Sunday night will not. The Cowboys-Eagles will be the highest rated game probably so far of the season. They both have the same record. They're both 3-3. Now, I thought the Cowboys, they were my pick to win the NFC. Eagles thought they were a playoff team. Right now, both teams are kind of reeling. But I think when you look at the two teams, they are completely the opposite. Because when you have something to fix within a business, like one thing here, one thing there, it's not really the end of the world. You just know what the problem is. You know, depending on what your industry is, you might be able to do it right then. You might have to wait till the end of the year, whatever. There's only so much Howie Roseman can do. He has a cornerback problem. They've had injuries. They had a draft pick that they took a couple years ago in the second round, Sidney Jones, who's just not any good. Their backup corner, Maddox, got killed the other day. He's been out for a couple weeks, or I guess he was out last week. And they just have a corner problem. Like, it's pretty clear. You just watch the Eagles, and you go, they're a really good team. They have a corner problem. They can't cover anyone. Well, there's only, maybe you could trade for Chris Harris. You can't be totally reckless and just trade, like, multiple first-rounders for Jalen. It also takes two to tango. Like, you need the Jaguars to be like, we'll give you Jalen Ramsey, and all reports indicate that they won't. So when I look at the Eagles, I see a 3-3 team, but it's kind of understandable. You go, well, Doug's pretty well-established, one of the best coaches in the league. Carson Wentz, pretty well-established, one of the more talented younger quarterbacks in the league. I'm not the biggest Jim Schwartz guy, but we've seen Jim's resume the last couple years. He's been a high-level defensive coordinator. So the coaching staff's good. A lot of the players they have on their team, they just have a massive hole, and there's not that much you can do in the middle of October. So whether they win or lose this Sunday, whether this season kind of unravels because of corners, you at least can put your finger on exactly what it is. So if I was going to have a down year, I'd want to put my finger on exactly what it is, especially when it's just a position group. And it sucks. I'm not saying that it wouldn't be terrible to miss the playoffs or, you know, not win the division, have the Dallas beat you. But at least you would understand. You would know what your problem is. And then your team's equipped. You've drafted some guys that should come up. You know, take over for Jason Peters. You got a left tackle. You got this young running back that looks like he's coming on. You got some young defensive linemen that look okay. Like, you got some things to build on. Again, I'm not trying to justify potentially if they lose and don't make the playoffs, though this Sunday won't necessarily determine that. But at least we know exactly what the problem is. To me, the Cowboys' problem is a much bigger issue. It's the coach. If you have a coach who is ultimately the detriment of your team, like, that is a major issue. It's why Jerry Jones, I can't believe Jerry Jones doesn't get rid of this guy. I can't believe Jerry Jones doesn't get rid of this guy. Jerry Jones, 77 years old. He loses more sleep on thinking about going on a coaching search. Do you understand when you go on a coaching search, you fire a coach, you bring in an entire new staff that has completely different visions of players on your roster? It is a big deal, and it takes a lot of time to change. Like, even look at the Eagles. When they got rid of Chip Kelly, they had to go to Doug Peterson. They kind of took a step back, and then they took a couple steps forward. But that step back is what Jerry is trying to avoid. Now, it's kind of looking more clear, like it's unavoidable, because now, even if the Cowboys, let's say, beat the Eagles this Sunday and go on to have one more win than them and win the division at 10-6, they look like a one-and-done team. Like, they look like they're not playing that hard for Jason Garrett. Tony Romo said on the broadcast, like, I'm not the biggest Kirk Cousins guy, but I took the Eagles +3 on the Friday podcast to put a little money on them this weekend. But you go, well, if Kirk Cousins is good,
they had two elite wide receivers, and he lit them up because he was hitting the deep ball. Like, it was, when you watch the game, it was like they're just doing one thing, throwing bombs, and there's nothing the Eagles can do because their quarterbacks stink. I'm watching the Cowboys, the Jets, who are an embarrassment, because at least we would say, well, when Kirk Cousins plays well, the Vikings are one of the best teams in the league. They got two elite wide receivers, they got a good tight end, they got a star running back, they got an elite defensive head coach, they got good defensive personnel. Like, it's justifiable. You go on the road to the Jets with a quarterback who had been out for a month with mono. Now, we've argued on the show whether he got it from kissing, sharing Kleenexes. Regardless, he's been out. He comes back, and he looks like Aaron Rodgers in his prime. If you have not watched that game, just Google the highlights of Sam Darnold. He looked freaking fantastic. He looked incredible. He shouldn't look that good because they're not rolling out. You know, Wayne Corbett ain't walking through that door. I like Robbie Anderson, but he's been MIA, and he looks like Randy Moss. They kicked the living crap out of the Cowboys, ran circles around them. The Cowboys showed up to New York lifeless, dead. It was a joke. And the one meme or GIF or whatever coming off where Jason Garrett's trying to high-five people and people just walk right by him. And then Tony Romo mentions on the broadcast that this offense is starting to look like Jason Garrett's influence. They're running the ball all the time, and Zeke looks good. But you know who doesn't look good? Dak! He just looks like meh. He looks like meh. Because I'm watching, if you just brought a guy from the moon and said, what quarterback is the max quarterback in that game? The man from the moon, by halftime, would have been like, the redheaded dude in white and green? The dude, the Jets quarterback is the guy I'd want. Of course. Because now Dak, and this shows you how fast things change, you know, 3 weeks into the season, we were like, oh, Dak's price went way up. Now, has it gone way down? And maybe, I just know this. Under no circumstances, and I repeat, no circumstances, would I give Dak over $100 million. I said the same thing about Jared Goff. None. I wouldn't have done it. I understand why you have to do it, I guess, but I would not do it. I get why you give Carson Wentz that much money, because his ceiling's as high as the sky. I understand it. I do get that. I get why you max out Anthony Davis or the Greek Freak before they prove anything, because their ceiling. Like, it's pretty clear. Jared Goff and definitely Dak, their ceiling's not that high. Now, that doesn't mean Carson Wentz might never win a damn thing. But it was understandable when they gave him all that money. Because, again, his ceiling, high as the sky. Those guys' ceiling, as high as, like, maybe a tall building. And Dak, who I've always rooted for and liked, I don't know, man. It just, something's off. They got issues. And unlike the Eagles, however the season turns out, like, we know exactly what their issues are. Well, are the Cowboys' talent not as great? Is it the coaching staff? Like, I can't really put a finger on the Cowboys. Now, if you really want to dive in, you go, well, the Cowboys' offense looked like shit last year, and then Amari showed up, and they were good. Well, Amari, you know, wasn't really there, and in the parts where he's missed in games when he's been banged up, like, you feel it. They are dependent on Amari. The problem with Amari is, on the toughness scale, I wouldn't put Amari on, like, the DeAndre Hopkins level. You know, he's, when he gets a little hurt, he's kind of done, you know? He's got to be 100% to play. When he's, like, 80, you don't get the same Amari. I saw it at a front row seat here in Oakland. When he's into it, he's into it. When he's not, he's not. And that's the problem. Like, are you going to give Amari $18 million a year? So you're going to give Amari $60 million and then Dak $100 million? I've just seen the Rams. They gave Jared Goff all that money. They gave Todd Gurley all that money, and now they're screwed. You better be careful who you pay. I'll pay Aaron Donald all day long. I'll pay Khalil Mack all day long. I'll pay Carson Wentz. I'll take the risk on that. I'm not big. Amari's ceiling is higher. I just question the durability and how hard and much he wants it. You know, and just like DeAndre Hopkins, you got to yank him off the field. I'm watching George Kittle. He'd play with a broken leg. Would not give a shit. So the Niners this offseason are going to give George Kittle huge money. He'll deserve it. I trust that guy to go to war with that guy. Amari, I don't know. Dak, I do. Like, I don't question Dak's toughness. His leader. I just don't think he's good enough. And this is the NFL. Like, you don't get, like great, you're a high-character guy. Everyone loves you. Can you perform? Like, we judge you on your performance. That stuff matters. Now, I want high-character guys around, but you got to be able to perform. And I just, Jason Garrett and Dak Prescott, that might be Jason Garrett right there on the phone. I just don't trust to perform. Where Doug and Carson, big picture, I just do. Okay,
Let's dive into the Cleveland Browns and the Seattle Seahawks. And I don't have much to say about the Seattle Seahawks. We've talked a lot about them this year, over the years. Their resume is established. They're winners. Their culture is toughness. Their culture is smash mouth. Their culture is hit you directly in the jaw. And if you get back up, they swing again. And you can swing on them, and they're always going to get up. They put on a clinic of just being tougher, of being more relentless, and having a superstar quarterback. Like, that was just, they were getting their ass kicked early, down 20-6, and they just found a way. There's a will, there's a way. And they had shit go against them. The guy shanked a punt, which led to a touchdown that was ultimately that they came driving back from. Seattle's just better coached, way less talent. But besides, I mean, obviously Russell's elite, but they're just, beside Russell Wilson, they don't have anywhere near the talent of the Cleveland Browns. But they got Pete Carroll. You know, he's won multiple natties, won a Super Bowl, been to another. Would he even hire Freddie Kitchens on his coaching staff? Probably not. So to me, Seattle Seahawks, 5-1. You know, it's pretty clear this Monday Night Football game in about a month from today against them and the Niners could be a showdown of like 8-0 and an 8-1 team. I mean, that could be a big time game. But we know Seattle's not going away. Seattle goes to the playoffs. What they do? Been there 6 of the last 7 years. In the worst year in those 7 year stretch, they went 9-7. So their culture reigns supreme. The Browns have no culture. The Browns have an owner that stole from our hardworking truckers in Flying J. Jimmy Haslam's a clown. Freddie Kitchens, I don't think he's a clown. I just think he has no business being the head coach. Completely over his head. And I'm sure there's been a lot of coaches when they first got their shot, especially if it became at a younger age, that were over their head. And sometimes you have an opportunity to kind of work into a job. Well, that wasn't the case with this team because they drafted Baker Mayfield #1 overall last year. They trade for Odell Beckham. They acted like they were a piece away, and they clearly aren't. But the one thing I noticed in that game, I'm not completely putting it on Freddie. I've talked about Freddie. I've been crushing Freddie for a couple weeks. You guys know how I feel. The thing I saw was Baker Mayfield, and I was a Baker Mayfield guy as a player. Now, the cockiness and some of that stuff starting to drive me nuts, but just as a player, loved him coming out of Oklahoma, and I like what I saw last year. He hung his hat on being, his accuracy was elite. His ball placement was elite. Well, I noticed in the Seattle game, his ball placement's all over the map. And some of the interceptions he threw 3 were because balls were behind guys. He's putting balls in tough places to catch. Even a ball that he threw last week that led to a long interception in the Niner game, he threw it behind his wide receiver. His ball placement is off. Another thing Baker Mayfield does, when the pocket collapses, he tries to run away like he's Russell Wilson or Lamar Jackson. Baker, you're a below-average NFL athlete. Stop running away. Stay in the pocket and either throw the ball away or hit your guys in the hands. Because that's what they drafted you to do. Hit people in the hands. That's what you did. Your comparison was a stronger arm Drew Brees. Right now, you're not at all. Right now, your balls are going all over the map. Like, you watch Russell Wilson come on the field, accurate, 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 hitting guys in stride. Baker throwing it behind guys, throwing it off guys. He's not even close. Like, to me, the Browns' problem on Sunday, unlike Monday night, where I thought that was a coaching issue, was Baker Mayfield, who was atrocious. Atrocious. Was really bad. He's not playing winning football. It's why I said coming into the season, when they anointed this guy, PFF, and all these people putting him in these top tiers with Rodgers and Russell Wilson and Brady, it was like, am I taking crazy pills? And I like Baker Mayfield, but what are we putting him in the class with these guys? He hadn't done anything. Baker Mayfield? And I actually didn't think it was going to be this bad, but I did think he was going to come back to earth a little bit. And the game Sunday was a joke. Now, I'm not going to try to, you know, psychoanalyze and figure out, like, his commercials, this, I don't know. You know, what led to it? I don't know. I just know his accuracy right now is not good enough. Not when you're drafted #1 overall. Not when every time I turn on the television, I see your face, or open Instagram, I see your face. Like, can we complete some important balls against some good teams and not let Seattle just punk you at home? And now you have a bye, and then you get the New England Patriots? So you can tell me all you want about, you know, the second half of their schedule's easy. I don't care if they play Miami Dolphins 8 straight times in the second half of the schedule. They're about to be 2-5. Now, if you played the Miami Dolphins, you'd probably rattle off like 6 wins, but
bad example. I'm just saying you could play, you know, the Steelers. Like, you're not a lock to beat anybody. You're the Cleveland Browns. My entire adult life, you've been losers. And now I watch you, you have quote-unquote more talent. You're still losers. So to just think, when I read these things, the Browns' schedule down the stretch is easy. I don't care. Because, again, you're not playing the Dolphins all eight games. That was unfair. They would probably beat them all eight games. But if you're just playing normal NFL teams besides the Dolphins, and you probably they play the Bengals twice, but like the Steelers, are you going to beat the Ravens again? I don't know. We'll see. I'm not picking you to beat any game beside the Bengals or like the Dolphins. You haven't earned that. Your quarterback's not playing well enough. Your coach has no clue what he's doing. The Browns are a disaster right now. And they get the Patriots. I think they have a bye this week and then the Patriots. 2-5. I would imagine the history of the league, there have not been many 2-5 teams make the playoffs. And the Ravens are now, what, 4-2? So they got a comfortable little lead. Now, granted, you know, the Browns beat them in their one head-to-head matchup, but do I think that John Harbaugh is just going to lose two games to Freddie Kitchens? And, I'm not some big Ravens guy, but by no means am I just, you know what, Freddie Kitchens will have that handled. No chance. I just think that when you watch that game, them against Seattle, it was an eye-opening experience from Baker. Like, why can't he place these balls where he used to be able to place them? He doesn't know where the football's going. No clue. Feels like he's lost a little bit, whether it's lost confidence, whether he's a little rattled. I don't whether he's not confident in the plays being called. I don't quite know. I don't know anyone with the Browns. But they better get Baker Mayfield fixed, and they better get him fixed fast, because you think it was ugly against Seattle. Now, Seattle's a culture team right now, but they're not really a talent team, especially in the back end of their defense. Well, the Patriots are the opposite. They got DBs everywhere, and they're picking off balls like it's flag football. So you better figure, you know, this whole thing out in the next week and a half and somehow get your mojo back, or you won't just lose, you'll get embarrassed. Okay, let's jump around the league and just some things that happened yesterday. I'd say probably the biggest win beside the Niners was Houston going on the road to Kansas City. Kansas City's now lost back-to-back games. They're still 4-2, and I still will be shocked if they don't go 12-4. They play the Broncos this week, who Denver's a sneaky, good, bad team. Like, they have, unlike the Redskins or the Dolphins, like, when they lost their four straight games, they were in every game. And if it wasn't for just a miracle at the end of the Bears game, they would have been 1-3, and they'd be 3-3 right now, and we'd be like, ah, they don't suck that much. I would expect Kansas City to get their mojo back. They do have somewhat of a problem right now. They can't stop the run. When Carlos Hyde's running all over you, a guy that they had traded to Houston, it's a little bit of a problem. Now, the other thing is Mahomes has been somewhat human, and I think part of it is because his ankle, he's not moving around quite as well. But the Texans are good. You know, Deshaun Watson is a baller. Like, that's just a good team. That was a playoff-level game. Chiefs didn't play that well and lost. I saw a great tweet by like an NBA reporter out of Chicago that said, I would love to watch this game with Ryan Pace. Ryan Pace, GM of the Bears, drafted Mitch Trubisky over those two guys. And that would have been a tough game. I know Ryan Pace was on a bye, but to watch, you took Mitch Trubisky over both those two guys. I get passing on Mahomes, but over Watson? You took Mitch Trubisky over Watson? Watson is a baller. I would imagine Coach Reed and all the Chiefs, and I tweeted at Honey Badger today. He actually tweeted back at me. I was just joking about the Monday Night Football game. He would say, you know, and he loves Deshaun Watson. Like, that guy's good. That guy's a star. Now, he doesn't have the physical gifts maybe of Wentz or Mahomes just in terms of pure arm velocity, but the guy makes plays. I respect the hell out of that guy. He's a stud, man. He really is. I think the Chiefs are going to be fine. Also, you know, the Raiders play the Packers, then the Texans. They're going to go, like, 9-7 would win you the AFC West, and the Chiefs are easily going to get to 10 wins. Kirk Cousins, listen. I talked about it a little earlier with the Eagles. He needed that game because he had dropped the ball against the Bears earlier in the season and looked horrendous. Like, they pay you a lot of money for the Bears to play the Eagles, to play the Packers. You got to play well in those games.
whatever, you play bad against the Jets or the Dolphins and the team still wins, no one cares. Like Thielen says, we can't run the ball for 150 yards every game. We're going to hit big shots. Why? We got two sweet receivers. Thielen's awesome. Diggs might be better. And they took advantage of that. And you know the great thing about the NFL? In the NBA, when players demand a trade, GMs often acquiesce and bend over to them. In the NFL, they say, cute story, bro. Have fun with that trade request. You ain't going anywhere. So if Stephon Diggs asks for a trade, they ain't trading him. You know, you don't trade a guy like that. He's just too good. And you know the easiest way to have a wide receiver get over his trade request? Throw him bombs. And that's what Kirk Cousins was doing. You know, it's pretty clear. When you start looking at the landscape of coaches who are going to get fired at the end of the year, you know, Jay's gone. Kind of looked like Rivera was in trouble. He's flipped the script fast. He's now 4-2 and looks like a playoff team. Dan Quinn. It's one thing to get beat by the Tampa Bay Bucks and have them throw up 55 points on you. It's another thing to lose to Dan Quinn, to lose to the Arizona Cardinals and Kyler Murray. And they were getting beat pretty soundly the majority of the game. That was bad. That was embarrassing. Now, I think they like Dan Quinn. They probably won't fire him midseason, at least not till December. But he's done. It's over. It's a wrap. Like, it's official now. They're 1-5. Their defense is hideous. He has nothing to do with Julio or Matt Ryan. He's a defensive coach. And their defense couldn't be any worse. It could not be any worse. One game this morning, I went, you know, I tried to get a little workout in the morning. I try to watch a couple games I don't get to see on Sunday. The first game I threw on was Jacksonville and the Saints. Gardner came back to earth a little bit. One guy that I actually like a lot is DJ Charks. He's been really good, man. Him and DK Metcalf have been making plays this year. Dennis Allen, who I had a front row seat when I used to work at the radio station. We used to make so much fun of him. He was a terrible head coach. Now, part of that, their team was pretty shitty. I mean, their roster wasn't good. But he was so stiff, and he had a nickname like Stick in the Mud. He needed to lighten up. And he's gone to Sean Payton and turned that defense into an absolute hammer of a unit because they hammered the Jacksonville Jaguars. They are so physical. Like, them and the Niners right now are on a different level of just physically hitting people. Now, the Patriots can cover. I mean, they can cover. It feels like they got four Deion Sanders going right now. Obviously, Gilmore is playing at that level, but there are other guys. McCourty's are making plays. Their secondary is awesome. But when you watch the Niners and the Saints, they are cracking skulls. People are getting crushed. Their D-lines dominate. Now, the Patriots, as a unit, are playing really well. I don't feel like they're as physical as those teams. I'm not trying to diminish what they're doing because it's all the point of the game on defense is to not allow points, and all these teams are doing it. I'm pretty sure Sean Payton, someone forwarded me, that he said after the game they could have played 8 quarters and the Jags wouldn't have scored. That was impressive. And Gardner was, you know, due. He's a 6-round rookie for a clunker, and you got a clunker. I don't know if we've ever seen in the history of the league that there was, I guess it was 99, that it went Couch, McNabb, Akili Smith. And obviously McNabb was a royal hit for the Eagles, right? I don't know, you know, if you'd consider a home run a Hall of Famer, he was like a stand-up triple. The other two guys were busts. What's weird about Mariota and Jameis, like, those guys are busting out of the league. Like, Mariota and Jameis are both going to be in the league for 10 years. They're not going away. But they're not hits, but they're not exactly busts. They're just not any good. They're kind of bizarre. Like, you watch Jameis, and I got up, I watched bits and pieces of the early game. The way I would describe Jameis is I went out on Saturday night, was out at dinner, out with this girl, whatever, had some fun, went kind of roll over my bed, and not actually in my own bed, so I had the phone under my pillow, and I pull the phone out, and I see it's 6:40 in the morning. It might have been like 6:42. I'm like, oh, the game's on. So I click on my ESPN app, and I click it, and I see there was a minute into the game. And so I just checked the stats because it's already 3-0, or maybe it was 2 minutes in. And Jameis was 0-1 and had a pick. So it wasn't even 7 a.m. on the West Coast, and Jameis had already had a pick.
He just throws picks at historic rates. He has more picks by a mile than games played in his career. And, I mean, a couple of those picks late in the game, whatever. But his picks in the middle and key spots are just are terrible. And Mariota's the opposite. He, like, refuses to throw the ball. Just a disaster. I mean, it's just those two guys, they're different, yet they're both the same. They're just not good enough. They're not, it's just, I don't even know what to say. And then on the other end, the Panthers, man, they've just gone 4-2, and I saw Schefter or someone tweeted that Cam is going to come back. Well, here's the thing. Like, everyone's like, what do? It's easy. If Cam's 100% healthy, you can always bring Kyle Allen back to the bench. He's Kyle Allen. He's an undrafted free agent. Cam gets to play, and if Cam's not good, you just bench him after that. But it's an easy move. Like, Kyle Allen's not untouchable, and I'm not even a Cam guy. When Cam's 100% healthy, you just put him back out there, if he, quote-unquote, is 100% healthy, and you bring Kyle Allen back to the bench. And if Cam loses you a game, you flip it. It's pretty easy. You give Cam a shot, and you go from there. But I'm watching Kyle Allen. It's not really debatable at this point that he's pretty good. I was thoroughly impressed with Kyle Allen. The Washington-Miami game, zero thoughts. I watched maybe two snaps of that game. Kudos to Miami for attempting the two-point conversion. Josh Norman is just a terrible football player at this point in time. I root for Washington just to lose every game possible. I hate everything about those two teams. Baltimore, you know, people make such a big deal over Lamar Jackson and his rushing yards. I could care less about how many rushing yards a quarterback has. Pay you to throw the ball. Like, throw the football. And I think that's basically we have most of the games covered. Pittsburgh, L.A. Chargers. I mean, the moment the Steelers went up 24-0, or I guess it was 14-0, then it went 21-0. As I said earlier, it was the lowest rated game, Sunday Night Football. I turned the game off because I was in my office and turned it on the Yankee game. That game was an embarrassment. The Chargers should be embarrassed. Dean Spano should be embarrassed. The team stinks. I mean, to get beat by Duck Hodges, to get beat by a four-string guy that wouldn't even have been in the NFL if it weren't for several interviews, and his claim to fame is he's the best duck caller in the NFL. Like, you get beat by a guy whose nickname's Duck Hodges. But again, like I said earlier on the podcast, that's what happens when you, you know, have a $4 million coach. There's a reason all the best coaches make like $7, $8, $9 million. You get what you pay for in life, like in the NFL. Okay, let's get to the Middlecoff mailbag. Got some questions? Slide up in those DMs. Answer it right here. Hey, John. Jumped on the bandwagon. I love your takes. Appreciate it. Had a question in the Tank for Tua sweepstakes. The Dolphins and the Bengals and the Redskins are all pathetic. Would the new coach for the Redskins move off Haskins like he was Josh Rosen? The trend seems like the new coach will want his own guy, but I feel bad he isn't going to get a fair shake. Well, I'd say the difference here is that, let's say the Redskins finish 2-14 and have like the number 2 or 3 pick. So let's say Tua goes 1 or Herbert goes 1 or Burrow goes, whatever the order is, and have an opportunity to draft a quarterback. The owner drafted Haskins. So if you want to get the Redskins job, the only person who's going to get the Redskins job is going to be a coach that says he likes Dwayne Haskins. If you say you don't like Dwayne, unless you're like Mike Tomlin, you know, there were some rumors about that, but I just mean like a high level coach that he wouldn't be able to turn down. But like the coaches, the Jay Grudens he's going to go after in the league are going to like have to tell him they like Haskins, because it's one thing, like the owner didn't give a shit about Josh Rosen. It didn't mean anything to him, right? They weren't tight. Like, this was Dan Snyder's pick. He wanted Dwayne Haskins. So I would lean no chance. Like, Dwayne Haskins is going to start for a couple years for the Redskins. Now, if he's bad, they'll just move on, but he's going to get to play. Why is Eric Berry still not on a team? We've seen Richard Sherman come back from Achilles injury and still perform well. What team should sign him to enhance their secondary? Well, remember, it was more than the Achilles. He just couldn't stay healthy. I think there were other things holding him back. Because remember, he tore his Achilles like 3 years ago. And he was injured last year. It was just always something. I'd have to ask people in Kansas City what the exact injuries were beside the Achilles, but it wasn't just the Achilles. I would agree, just the Achilles in itself you can come back from,
But I think he had other knee issues. I think he the reason he's out of the NFL right now is because his health is just terrible in terms of, like, health to play football. I think his health, knock on wood, with, like, cancer and stuff, he overcame that. And the Chiefs love him. I mean, he was, like, their team captain. He was their guy. But you get to a point where even if you're beloved on the team, where injuries just take a toll and you have to move on. It's a tough part about the business with a guy like that. You know, who I would imagine the Chiefs just, I mean, again, they love him, but he's just always hurt. I wanted to ask you your thoughts on Tua Tagovailoa. I'll just call him Tua. From all I hear, he's a second coming of Elway or Luck. Let's pump the brakes there. I'm a Texas A&M graduate right now, right out of school, so I saw plenty of him while I was there, and later again today, unfortunately. He was good today. But I do believe he's one of the best college players I've ever seen. I think here's the most difficult part with Tua, is that he is playing with three wide receivers, as an NFL scout told me earlier this year. Two are going to go in the top 15. Jerry Jeudy might go in the top 5. I think the fast one is Ruggs. I might be getting him and the other guy flipped around. Whoever the guy that runs like a 4.140, he's going to go in the top 15. He's like a better version of John Ross, you know, Tavon Austin type, but he's better than all those guys. And then they got another guy who probably go in the second round. So you got two top 15 wide receivers and another guy that's going to go in the second round. His wide receiving core right now in college is probably one of the best units we've seen in like the last 30 years. And when you watch him, he does throw a beautiful ball. I think the question is going to be, what's he like throwing into tight windows? That's why I think when he plays Auburn, when he plays LSU, when then he plays whoever he plays in the SEC championship game, which will probably be Georgia, and then when he plays Clemson, Ohio State, you know, some of these teams, Oklahoma, who's actually pretty good on defense, I think he's really going to be nitpicked. So I think the game against LSU, I think the game against Auburn, I think the game against Georgia, and then I think the playoff games are going to be heavily, heavily emphasized. That's why I said, when you got Joe Burrow, he keeps passing these tests. Now, so does Tua, but Tua's been doing it for a while. I think people are, everyone I talk to there loves him, like that does the SEC. He's a high-character guy. Obviously, all the Pauly guys, it was like this at Fresno. When you bring a Pauly guy on a recruiting visit, like 20 people come. I think Tua's entire family lives in Tuscaloosa. Big kind of group of guys. Big, very family-oriented, highly respected, has some swag, people like him. Just a legend in the town right now, obviously. I've yet to hear one negative thing about the person. So I think he checks all the boxes off the field. And then you go on the field. The question is, what's it going to be like when he doesn't have guys wide open? Or when he's playing, like you go to Miami, their wide receivers are worse than Alabama. That's not even opinion. That's a fact. So there is some projection there where Luck was 6'5 and 240 pounds and a genius, you know, and really accurate. Where Tua, he's a little smaller. You know, he's probably 6'1, I'd guess 215, but he's good. I like him, you know. Now, do I love him? I don't see a guy I'd love to take top 5. I mean, I wouldn't mind taking like the 20s, but that's not the reality of where he's going to go. Hey, Jung, longtime listener. Just wondering, what's the silly logic behind the staggered bye week schedule? Why can't all the teams have byes on the same week? So like Thanksgiving, except for one team game with the Cowboys. I mean, the league preaches parity everywhere, yet puts such an unnecessary strain on teams by scheduling these byes all over the place. Yeah, you're asking the wrong guy. I'll be honest, I know nothing about like why byes are where. And, you know, I'm not going to complain about it because it's always been like that. They're always staggered. You know, think about the advantage. Like the 49ers have their bye week 3. Think if you're a team that has your bye week 8. Think of the advantage if you can have the bye week 8. Well, you don't want the bye week 3 or 4 or 5. You want it week like 9 or 10 to give yourselves, like, guys, kind of a week off, a chance to take a deep breath and to have the home stretch. I also think the league looks at it like you get two byes. You get a bye, you know, legit bye, and then your Thursday night game technically is a bye. You get 10 days off. Now, you got to practice that next week, but you get, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you kind of get to ease into the week. Question for the podcast. Will you concede now that the 49ers are the top dog in the NFC West? A couple weeks ago, you told us Seattle was a favorite to win the NFC West after barely edging out LA due to a rare missed field goal. Teams that Seattle has barely edged out and getting obliterated by the Niners. Yeah, I mean, I just think Seattle's earned it. Once the Niners beat them, if they do, then I'll tip my hat to the Niners. I think the Niners are really good. That game Sunday was a clinic. Their defense is elite. Kyle's elite. Can they beat Seattle? I mean, they've struggled to beat Seattle over the last 10 years, even when Harbaugh was here. Like, Seattle's kind of gotten the best of them. Seattle, like I said in the Cleveland kind of rant, they have a culture of toughness. And they can like kind of reach back to all these games they've won over the last, you know, several years. So, yeah, I think 100% the Niners can hang with them. But do I feel confident the Niners is going to beat them? I don't. Doesn't mean they can't. Doesn't mean they won't. But I'm not going to stand up here and just make some prediction the Niners are going to win the end. They might. They could. They easily could. Niners are good. Seattle's good. These are two good teams. Couldn't ask for anything more. They're legit rivals. Like, the Rams aren't really the Niners' rival. You know, when I grew up, the Niners' rivals were the Cowboys and the Packers. I don't look at the Rams like I hate the Lakers. I don't really hate the Dodgers despite being a big Giants fan, because the Giants, them and the Dodgers never play in impactful games beside the season. Like, the years they won the World Series, the Dodgers sucked, vice versa the last 5 years. The Rams have been in St. Louis forever. I don't even like view them as an LA team necessarily. Appreciate everyone listening. Enjoy the day. Enjoy the week. Man, I'm already kind of wiped out. It's been a lot of football these last 3 or 4 days. You got to love football season. Man, I'm just gutted for the Lions. Tonight was absolute BS. Total BS. Enjoy the week. Thanks for listening. Tell all your friends. See ya.